It can be a little hard to make sense of our national attitude towards science. On one hand, we tout the importance of science and even set up special STEM schools to concentrate on the STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and math. On the other hand, we have a parade of political figures who dispute human causes for climate change, then say, "I'm not a scientist." Well, neither's our next guest, but she leads a potentially rousing talk about scientists and science and attitudes toward both. Oregon Humanities presents a conversation project called In Science We Trust, and there's a question mark at the end of that. The program is coming to Selma later this week. Gail Wells is the person who's going to be delivering that, and she's our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Gail, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, Jeff. Nice to be here.
So, Gail, tell us about yourself. You're a writer, I guess, and write mostly or communicate mostly about science and technical matters?
I do. I have a master's degree in scientific and technical journalism, and at the moment I'm employed at the Extension Service at Oregon State University, our communications shop, and the Extension has a long history of applying research to real-life problems out in the world, and so we are the my department is the outreach and publications arm of the Extension Service here.
I've often thought that is a fun and rigorous branch of journalism, science or technical journalism, because you have to be able to be conversant in the terms and yet still be able to deliver them to a general audience.
It is having a foot in two worlds, for sure. I tell people that I've earned the equivalent of about 15 half master's degrees from all the topics that I've covered, not a full master's degree at any one thing. And yet it's important to stand at a little bit of a distance because, like any social enterprise, science has its own sort of headspace that it puts people in and its own set of assumptions about the world. And so to be a good interpreter, I have to be able to stand back and ask, what is the importance, what is critical for the average person in this research or whatever it is that I'm writing about?
To understand the headspace but not adopt it, perhaps.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yes.
How did this conversation project event come about?
Well, the conversation project as a whole, do you mean the...
I mean specifically In Science We Trust.
My own. Mm-hmm. Well, I have written about science and technology, particularly as they apply to natural resources, for years, 30 years, I would say. I got to know forestry a little bit because I grew up in the South Coast, Oregon, and I was steeped in forests and logging. And so I have been writing about it for a long time. I never did get a science education per se, but it occurred to me, particularly as the climate change debate started to become front and center, and this has been quite a few years ago now, it occurred to me that there's just a disconnect here. I grew up in an era where scientists were really quite revered. I'm old enough to remember the Salk vaccine, which wiped out polio in young children. And I'm old enough to remember the moon landing, the first moon landing in 1969. And so it seemed to me that people's attitudes had both changed about, well, I didn't know. I was curious about whether people thought differently about science than science today, or whether something else was at play, or whether the questions that science was trying to address were just simply naughty, wicked questions, where in the past perhaps they weren't so naughty and wicked, if you follow me.
Naughty with a K. Okay.
Yes.
Glad you got that.
No.
Which raises the question then, I mean, as you look at the trend, I mean, and I can remember some of the same benchmarks you were talking about. I went to Jonas Salk Junior High School in New York.
Oh, my goodness.
That kind of thing. So I have to believe that respect for science does tend to ebb and flow a bit through American history.
I think you're right. I have a theory, and this is one thing that I prompt people on in my conversation. And by the way, just to digress a bit, I do try to keep it a conversation and not a lecture.
Okay.
I certainly am not an expert on any of these. But one of the prompts that gets people to think, and that it got me thinking, is that in the day when, in those heady years after World War II, when the economy seemed unstoppable and science and technology were very high on people's lists of esteemed institutions, it just kept delivering goodies. You know, it just kept delivering good stuff for us. You know, the standard joke about it is Tang. Science invented Tang and sent Tang into space. That's a reference that a lot of younger people aren't going to catch, I think. But the point being that science and technology were very much married, and the technology that science was delivering tended to improve people's individual lives and prosperity. I get the sense today that, and I say science really advisedly because it's such a huge thing, but many of the science-related topics that are in the news now are kind of bad news. You know, we don't want to be told, I don't like to be told that what I'm doing is making the earth uninhabitable for my great-great-grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Instead of giving me things to make my life better and easier, science is delivering news that maybe some of us don't want to hear. Hmm. So I think maybe that's part of it.
Okay. Gail Wells is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a science writer working for Oregon State University Extension Service and the head of the Oregon Humanities Conversation Project event called In Science We Trust. And it's In Science We Trust with a question mark at the end. It'll be held on Friday, the 13th, at Deer Creek Center in Selma. We'll talk about the time with Gail in just a minute. You can join this conversation now. Maybe you have some stories of your own about your own thoughts about science through the years and whether those have transmogrified a bit as the years have gone on, or observations about other people and their views of science. We'd like to hear those at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. No, I don't know that transmogrified is, in fact, a word.
It is a word.
It is. Okay, good. Gail, it seems like even when we respect what science does, there's still a kind of a division here, because I can still remember that at the same time that we were oohing and aahing about people walking on the moon, we were also still continuing to call people who are interested in science nerds and eggheads.
Yes, isn't that interesting? yes, I think so. Just as with science is a, well, I'm not sure where to go with that. It's certainly a social phenomenon. You know, it's a way of expressing one's personal, you know, destiny or calling in the world, just as art is, just as writing is, just as a talent for business. People have a talent for what we've come to call the scientific method or scientific thinking. And I think, as far as whether they're nerds and eggheads, I think maybe that's a little bit more respectable now that's what's the dilemma that I like to talk about in my conversation. Because I don't think it's quite so, I think people who have a bent toward science and rigorous thinking tend to get more respect now as young people than they did maybe when I was growing up. I could be wrong about that.
You may be onto something, though. I mean, I have a friend who works at a STEM school in Connecticut, so it seems like we've come a long way in respect.
Well, who
people.
Ever heard of STEM?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, that's a new development. And perhaps one of the things, this is not something that I've thought about in the context of my conversation, but perhaps encouraging women to go into intellectually rigorous pursuits as they were not encouraged to do when I was growing up. Maybe that has been part of the sort of rehabilitation of the reputation of the scientist.
A good point. It doesn't seem that long ago that there was a Barbie with the little pull cord, and she'd say, math is hard.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, things have changed a bit. The materials on the Oregon Humanities website that lays out the conversation project about science refers to people getting confused by science. What appears to be contradictory information. Can you give some examples there?
Yes. Science is, I'm not, let me preface that for a minute. Science is not designed to give answers. Well, let me back up for a minute. It is not designed to tell us what to do or not to do. That's one of the things I like to talk about. It's not, the project of science is not to make policy or to advise us what we should or shouldn't do. And I think maybe that's one of the misunderstandings. Why don't they tell us? They've done all this study. Why don't they tell us vaccination is safe or vaccination isn't safe? That's one example.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, science pretty much says vaccination is safe enough to provide safety for the larger population and at very, very minimal risk to individuals. And that's one of the things that people don't believe. Some people don't believe. There's some reluctance to. I'm getting a little bit balled up.
No, I see the point that science cannot provide 100%
surety. Exactly. Yeah. Yes, people want certainty or clarity, and science is not particularly about certainty or clarity. It's about probability, and it's about, in its purest form, it's about how does this place we call the universe work.
And probability a little more firm than just flipping a coin. I mean, we're talking about getting beyond the 50-50 split.
That also can be a point of misunderstanding or confusion. When scientists say we have a 95% probability, most of us would call that pretty certain. But they won't say it's a sure thing, because you can't say that as a science. You say it's a 95% probability. And many of us, I think, have not been trained very well to understand what that means, to be able to think through what probability is saying.
Right, but this is the point a journalist can grasp instantly, because this is the reason we don't say so-and-so killed so-and-so. It's allegedly until a jury says it happened.
Yes.
And even then there can be doubt.
Yeah.
Gail Wells is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, science writer working for Oregon State University Extension and the leader of the Oregon Conversation Project, conversation called In Science We Trust. It'll be Friday at the Deer Creek Center in Selma for the next happening in our area. Join us on the Exchange now. Let's talk about science. Let's talk about ways in which science influences you, ways in which you have questions or issues with science. More than welcome to talk about it here on the Jefferson Exchange. 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So since I got into the discussion of journalists, I mean, do the news media have an effect on perceptions of science? It seems like many stories get published or run about a bold new study, an article in a science or medical journal. And then it seems like a few weeks or months later, we get another article about another journal article that refutes what the other one said.
Yeah. I do think that the journalists, the first question was, does journalism influence how people perceive science? It absolutely does. That's really the lens through which most lay people view science. Most of us are not scientists, so we rely on the media to teach us about what science is up to and what it's doing. I think the issue there is, again, it goes back to what the project of science is, which is classically the way it's described is kind of a slowly accreting, I use the word coral reef, it just kind of keeps on adding pieces and pieces of knowledge to a building base of knowledge in a particular topic area. Occasionally, a big breakthrough will come around, but those are rare. The scientific revolutions are not common. And then that upends everything we thought we knew. The classic example is Copernicus, who saying that the Earth, in fact, was not the center of the universe. But those are rare, and most science is a slowly accreting reef of information. Again, people want certainty. The public would rather have science say this is an open and shut case for or against vaccination or global climate change or whatever topic you might want to have, burning of forests.
Yeah,
and so I think it's a worldview kind of it's like trying to translate between two different languages, which reflect two different ways of looking at the world.
Truly, I can see that. As facilitator, then, Gail, how do you get the discussion started? You mentioned it's not a lecture.
Well, I try to bring it back to people, and I ask them. I say, we're here to talk about science and its role in society. Tell me how science has made you feel and think as a child or as an adult. Have you ever felt flummoxed by what you should do about something? Or have you ever felt confused about whether you should check the labels for high fructose corn syrup? How important is that really? Should you pay extra for green alternative electrical energy? Should you hesitate to get your children vaccinated? How do you feel about that? Tell me your experiences. Tell me your stories. I am part of the Conversation Project because I am convinced that a conversation is the most hopeful and positive way to encourage us to think together. Lecturing and arguments and debates probably aren't as effective, in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the best way to frame a conversation is around stories. So I ask them to tell me their stories. And when someone mentions a point, the way I structure it, this has come about with a little bit of experience. It's not the same as a lecture at all, because the conversation can go all over the map, which is fun. But you have to kind of be ready to grab it and say, well, what about this? So I have a PowerPoint that I just kind of flip through. I've got 20 slides that are not in any order. And if somebody says, well, I remember Bill Nye the Science Guy, I have a Bill Nye the Science Guy video. So I show him that. And then I say, well, what do you think about this? Or there's this cartoon from The New Yorker, which you may remember years ago, which has two old guys looking at a blackboard with a bunch of formulae written on it. And one of the guys says, and in the middle it says, then a miracle occurs. And the guy goes, I think you should be more explicit here in step two. So that seemed to me to be a kind of an expression of how most of us feel when we are confronted with what science allegedly says. How did you get there?
Gail Wells, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the leader of the Oregon Humanities Conversation Project presentation called In Science We Trust. It'll be Friday in Selma at the Deer Creek Center. What time of day is that happening?
You know, I am not clear about that. Okay. I'm going to get there about 6. I think we're meeting at 7, but I haven't gotten a confirmation.
I think it is usually 7 p.m., I've noticed, with the Conversation Project stuff. So that's the assumption we'll work on. We'll correct it if we need to. So you can join us on the exchange, 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Doug in Roseburg. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks. Some good topics. And I'm with your speaker there about the bad news part of, I think, what increasingly has been part of science as most of us in the sort of consumer world has known it. I also think there's a couple of things that lend to that. The not well understood or not well articulated, perhaps both, difference between association and causation is something actually caused by, or is it just associated with, some particular phenomena that's being studied?
Mm-hmm.
And also, what I guess I would call bad science and bad scientists. I think we, most of us, would remember back to the days when there were supposed scientists that said smoking does not cause cancer and represented the industry. And, of course, there's plenty of other examples besides that that's more current. And a third point would also be the way in which studies are done that produce some kind of notable result, and the rigor or lack of rigor of those. Were they double-blind? Were they peer-reviewed? Or was it on a much less rigorous basis? And those are some of the things that I think are not well articulated, not well understood in the general populace that figures into this topic.
All right, thanks for the call there, Doug, and for bringing those points up. Let's come to the original one, the association and causation thing, where sometimes things happen at the same time but not because of each other. How deeply do you go into that, Gail?
We talk about that very thing. Thank you, Doug, for bringing all those up. Those are very, very good points, and they're all big. They're all big points. One of them, I think, the first one has to do with an understanding, or perhaps not as good an understanding as many lay people ought to have, about how science works, what we call the scientific method, the idea of correlation versus causation. If something happens after it, did the earlier event cause it? There are people, in mostly from the scientific side, who argue that the public is scientifically illiterate. And I think that's a bit of a judgment, and I don't know that it's very helpful in the conversation. But I do think that it's important for the public to have a basic framework of logic, of how these questions are asked and systematic, how they're systematically tested. Is it this cause? Is it this cause? Is it this cause? The question of also double-blind studies is part of the same issue. That science has developed this method to keep itself rigorous. That's not to say that every scientist follows that method, and some of the pieces of the method are a little bit opaque to those of us who don't understand how it works. But there is an institution around, that's not a very good word, but kind of a framework of thought that has evolved around science as we know it in the 20th and 21st centuries that is supposed to safeguard against those kinds of wrong conclusions. And when it's followed, it's a very robust system. It is a very, very good way to understand how the material world works.
Okay, we have about 3 minutes left, time enough to take a call from Jeff in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Gail Wells. We're talking about science.
You wanted to talk to Jeff?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I think that actually, the religion in some instances is a big obstacle to science, and there's a basic conflict there, in particularly in people that believe that absolute, you know, the veracity. I mean, of say the story of Genesis or something, and how that conflicts with evolution. And there's people that believe that we cannot be responsible for climate change. Humans can't be, because that would conflict with the idea that we're humans are somehow created in the image of God and we're perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I even hear that from politicians like the climate denier Hoffman from Oklahoma.
Okay, let's get a response. Thanks for that, Jeff.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. That's a very good point, too, and that always comes up. Someone always brings that up, and that's a really good point. There's a difference between an actual opposition of science and religion, which I think may be exaggerated. Many, many scientists I know have a spiritual bent themselves, and they are also wise enough to say, as a scientist, I do not have any opinion on things that are supernatural. I cannot have an opinion on those things, because that's not in my realm. They're two different realms. The second piece, I think I want to make that point, that there are people who want to distort the science for their personal agendas and for their political agendas, and the earlier caller, Doug, alluded to this too. The tobacco instance was very much an example of this. The scientists who had really no business commenting, it was not their area of expertise, and they had taken money from big companies. That happens, and that makes things very confusing for the general public. For science journalists like me, the best I can do is try to get the word out to try to tell the truth about what science is actually there, and be as fair and forthright about how science is practiced so that the credibility comes back. It's important that we understand and trust good science.
Gail Wells leads the Oregon Humanities Conversation Project called In Science We Trust, The Role of Science in a Democracy. And we check the time. It is 6:30, in fact, on Friday at the Deer Creek Center in Selma. So I want to make sure we didn't get people there half an hour late. 6:30 on Friday, Deer Creek Center in Selma. Gail Wells, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome.
All right, take care.